AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. All right, I'm checking this. Yep, it's a Monday, and we are getting into the last third of September, and the corn and soybean markets are acting like weather will help speed harvest along through the end of the month. Will that happen? We'll find out in just a bit. And it is time to get an update on what is happening at the Gulf.
Live from a fully reassembled Ag Info Juggernaut via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. Then it's Mike Steenhoek from the Soy Transportation Council. And right after the news, Michael Clark from BAM WX. I am handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Laurie.
Oh, it is good to hear your voice, my friend. How are you?
I am fantastically well, sir. Glad to be back. Glad to be back.
Glad to have you back home again. It's not like Clinton doesn't do a great job, but, you know, it's not the same. Davis, it's just...
Oh, I understand perfectly. I know. I understand. And I appreciate the outpouring of adoration and support from you right now.
Yeah, I guess we've kind of become a team doing
a
this.
Little bit. Yeah. You know, you might even call us an ag info juggernaut.
You might. That's
I would.
Right.
I would.
That's exactly right.
Bro, yes. It is dry in western South Dakota.
Oh, yeah.
So I was hiking around up in the hills up there, and, you know, some of it's through some cattle pasture and stuff, and I had a walking stick with me, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's a kind of a Moses thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, I'd hit a crack, and I'm not kidding. That would go in 6, sometimes 8 inches into these cracks, bro. It's dry.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, the South Dakota Chamber of Commerce might owe you some sort of a medal for, like... Vacationer of the year.
Well, I can tell you, I love it. I found a spot that I really, really love. And, you know, I have my specific reasons for that. But I did leave there thinking, you know what? I've had my fill of this spot for the year. I'm satisfied. I'm at capacity.
Excellent. So that is outstanding, dude.
Yes, sir.
Outstanding. So today's show, while we have assembled again, today's show is going to require a little bit of disassembly because we've got Margie stepping in for Machinery Pete to talk about what's going on in the used machinery world and the ag retailers world. But looking forward to the conversation with Margie. And, of course, always look forward to the conversation with Mike Steenhoek.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, natural gas prices and energy prices in general are becoming a major concern. Nat gas futures have climbed 17% this month alone to nearly double the price at the same time last year. Experts are beginning to murmur about the potential for shortages in the coming winter home heating season. Meanwhile, because of the row between China and Australia, U.S. coal exports to China rose 52% in the second quarter compared to Q2 last year. In addition, according to EIA, high international demand and declining inventories are supporting sharply higher propane prices around the globe. Although U.S. energy prices, including electricity, have risen, the domestic price increases have not kept pace with price increases in Asian and European markets, signaling more price support is likely, Chip. And it's early in the season to see this kind of rise.
That's right. It's way too early. You know we're going to be chasing those global prices to the upside. That's just how it works. That is how it works. Oh, my gosh. I didn't realize. I mean, we talk about China's imports of pork, China's imports of beef, China's imports of soybeans, corn, coal. I didn't even realize that they had been doing that. That is so interesting. We need to tap in and look into that a little bit further as time goes on.
Well, Chip, partisan bickering continues over whether or not to raise the government's borrowing limit, which will be a major topic of debate in the coming week. Democrats are brushing off GOP opposition and will move ahead this week on a vote to raise the debt ceiling as government cash stocks decline to dangerously low levels. The standoff has moved Wall Street analysts and business leaders to issue warnings about a rising risk of a technical default in which the government might be unable to make all of its regular payments in full. And on time.
Yeah, the equities markets do not like it this morning. The Dow's off more than 500 points. The NASDAQ is off more than 325 points.
Well, another partisan point of contention is Democrats' immigration proposal as part of the reconciliation bill. The Senate parliamentarian shot down the proposal, and a key Senate advisor on Sunday said existing rules will not allow Democrats to include in their social safety net bill a pathway to citizenship for up to 8 million immigrants. Republicans hailed the ruling as the correct reading of Senate rules and precedents. And Chip, the U.S. military has admitted an August 29 drone strike targeting ISIS militants actually took the lives of 10 Afghan civilians, including 7 children. In a move to make political hay, GOP critics argued that the deaths are a symptom of President Biden's turbulent withdrawal of troops from the country. Meanwhile, Afghanistan's economic meltdown continues to leave average citizens in the country scrambling to survive. The international community refuses to release Afghan national assets and is withholding direct aid, not wanting those assets to fall into the hands of the Taliban. The quagmire will likely drive millions into severe poverty. This is a tricky one, Chip.
Oh, this is unbelievable. And there is a high level of concern about the start of the UN meetings at which President Biden is attending. And he's going to face some really tough challenges there this week.
Well, and quickly here, we'll talk with Mike about this a little bit later. China imported 9.04 million metric tons of beans from Brazil in August. That's a 10.9% rise from a year ago. On the other hand, the U.S. exported just 17.575 metric tons of the oil seed to China last month. That's a dramatic drop from August 2020, Chip.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Michael Clark from BAMWX.com. Good morning, Michael.
Morning, Chip. How are you?
We're doing okay. But boy, we've got some showers that are making their way across the upper Midwest here today. Going to see them this afternoon here. But the real issue is over in the east where some really heavy rains are going to be falling, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, we've got the potential here for another 2-3 inches of rain, especially across Indiana, extreme northwestern Ohio into southern Michigan. So we've got a storm system coming through the next couple of days. It's going to bring quite a bit of rainfall here to the east for sure.
Okay. Take us into the weekend then. What do we start to see developing out there?
Yeah, so into the weekend, we've got a cold front that's going to come through, and really temperatures are going to crash some 20 to 30 degrees. So a huge cool down coming. There'll be a weak front Saturday that'll bring some light rain chances across the eastern belt into the Great Lakes. Nothing significant. But overall, after this pattern shift, after this storm, that the pattern really dries out. In fact, we get really dry, and the warmer temperatures are going to start to come back. So it's really going to start looking pretty ideal for harvest weather.
Yeah. There's a lot of them out there. A lot of growers would say, okay, it's not perfect harvest weather until after we get a freeze. I don't see that in the outlook.
I don't either. I see this year, I mean, overall, pretty normal expectancies, October 15th-ish for that to happen for most people. You know, if anything, we're just going to continue to accelerate everything by being warmer and drier. So I would say pretty normal threat with that right now.
Gotcha. Michael, hey, we've got the start of fall comes this week, which means that we're going to be looking for your winter weather outlook coming up here real quick. I understand that you're going to have that put together in a little over a month from now, October 27. If you want more information on that, go to BAMWX.com/webinar and take a look at it there. Michael, thanks, buddy.
Thank you so much, Chip.
You bet. We'll talk to you next week. Coming up next, Margie Eckelkamp. Joining me is Dr. Roy Brister, PhD. He is the Director of Nutrition at Tyson Foods. Dr. Brister, how important is soybean meal in the diet of poultry?
Well, soybean meal is our gold standard that we measure everything against. And what we like about soybean meal is the fact that it's available and it's fairly consistent. When we look at it, it ranges in protein from 45 to 48. But typically within a plant, it's very consistent. So it's a consistent source of protein. The digestibility is excellent. The balance of amino acids is probably better than any other protein source we have out there.
Okay, as a large animal producer, one of your top nutritional needs is amino acids provided by the proteins. Why is it important to look at protein content in a load of soybeans?
me and my team are always looking at the protein levels in these soybean meals that we get from all these sources and try to help our purchasing group understand what is the best price per unit of protein.
Dr. Brister, are you seeing a range of protein content? And I mean, how big of a deal is 1 or 2 percentage points?
For the last 3 months, proteins range anywhere from a 45.5 to about a 48% protein. If you just were looking at buying a ton of soybean meal, and you could buy a ton of 45% protein soybean meal or a ton of 48% protein, that 3%, that's 60 pounds of protein. You know, and a lot of times we pay for it based on a ton, but if you put that on a per unit of protein basis and you've got to haul 2,000 pounds, I'd rather haul 2,000 pounds of 48% than 2,000 pounds of 45%, just from a sustainability. And I'd have to haul a lot more of the 45. So when you start looking at cost, those small percentages add up.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Brister. That is Dr. Roy Brister, Director of Nutrition at Tyson Foods. For more information on how U.S. soybeans provide protein for animal agriculture, visit soymeal.org. Brought to you by the Soy Checkoff.
Machine repeat here, folks. This segment of AgriTalk brought to you by our friends at Dakota Ag Innovations, makers of Dakota Shine, the best way I've seen to fix faded paint. Go to dakotashine.com or call 888-996-7801.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you are with us. Greg has a commitment that he is tending to this morning, and in his place, we've got Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. But Margie has worked closely with Greg over at Machine Repeat for, what, 6, 7 years now, Margie?
Actually, since 2008, Chip. And I just think I have the greatest gig at Farm Journal, if not ever, in that I get to work with ag retailers across the country with The Scoop. And then I also get to stay connected with Greg Peterson and the fabulous team at Machine Repeat, who are just bringing really cool things to the machinery market.
Yeah, that is awful lot of enthusiasm for first thing Monday morning, Margie. You are fired up.
Normally, you guys just pigeonhole me into like 2 minutes on a Wednesday, but here we are Monday morning. Right. So let's go, guys. Greg is 10 inches taller than me. So I've got a big shadow to fill this morning.
Hey, we're not concerned about that. That's not what we're trying to do. We want to tell Margie's story here on AgriTalk, okay?
Well, excited to do it. Excited to do it. I will share, and I apologize. I was not on Wednesday's show last week talking about the latest in ag retail because I was kind of on a little bit of a top secret hush-hush mission for now. I was actually visiting the ARA Retailer of the Year. So I cannot disclose my location, but I will share another thing that has me really jazzed up, as Davis mentioned, is I got to visit with one of the, if not the, just outstanding trusted advisor to farmers here in the U.S. And they are so impressive in the way not only that they've brought technology in their business, but how they have maintained relevancy and adding value to their farmer customers. So really excited to tell that story. It will be public in December and will be our cover story in January for The Scoop.
Honestly, Margie, when I heard that you were doing this and going to be part of the ARA Retailer of the Year again, it really piqued my interest because coming off the year that we've come off and dealing with everything that we've dealt with, the Retailer of the Year is going to be a group that has exhibited unbelievable flexibility over the last year. It's got to be.
Well, and we talked a lot about the supply chain challenges that we're encountering in agriculture, and that goes everything from the chemicals that we apply to the machinery that we use in the field, right? Yeah. So I think that's the connective tissue of my role here at Farm Journal too, is I get to talk with folks who help farmers try to succeed despite the challenges thrown at them.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Margie, we've got an auction coming up tomorrow night that we have got to provide some detail on here, and it's the second monthly Machine Repeat online auction. I know that you did you take a look at the sale bill?
I did. I've watched, well, I watched the August event closely. So if folks aren't familiar, Machinery Pete is partnering with Big Iron to really bring Machinery Pete auctions as a powerful resource connecting buyers and sellers in this equipment market. And this is especially important as we enter the third and fourth quarters of the year when equipment values are hot. And also yeah. the supply is hard to come by. So we have brought this. It's all available at auctions.machinerypete.com. We have monthly, absolute, no reserve, no buyer's fee online auctions. We've got lots and lots of photos of these yeah. items that are for sale and also video, which is so yeah. important that folks can see this equipment run. And that's true for a round baler I'll highlight later. But also Machinery Pete and the team at Farm Journal, as well as Mark Stock and the experts at Big Iron, we are bringing a new TV show that is, yeah. like you said, like a video sale bill of these yep. events, right? So I just checked it out. The episode was new this past week, and it's available on Machinery Pete's YouTube. But basically, it's a 20-minute look and a highlight reel of some really cool items that are for sale at the Machinery Pete September online auction. Again, folks can check it all out at auctions.machinerypete.com. And as you said, Chip, bidding starts to close tomorrow. So right. definitely right. there are some good buys on this auction. We're expecting really active bidding. So everybody check it out.
Yeah. You know, what you just talked about, you talked about several things that have contributed to the current status of the used equipment market. You mentioned the supply chain disruptions earlier. Mm-hmm. Guys are buying equipment now because they don't know if they don't buy it and something breaks down, I might have to do without. And they're not going to be put in that kind of a position. They're not going to allow themselves to be put in that kind of a position. So they're buying just in case. They are buying because of tax reasons. And we're getting into the, you know, we're close to the final quarter of the year. Guys are starting to figure out what they're going to have to do there. And then the online side of things, Margie, my gosh, it just opens it up to everybody everywhere. And the list of potential buyers, when you do something like has been done in the auction world and online at machinerypete.com, you don't just double the buyers or it's an exponential factor that you're looking at that of people that might be interested in that piece of equipment, right?
Well, I would like to highlight five machines that we have for sale yeah. on our September auction. Again, everything available at auctions.machinerypete.com. But these are five high-quality John Deere 7760 cotton pickers, okay? Wow. So I was actually, yep. I was down in Georgia 2 weeks ago with our friends at John Deere looking at a new sprayer technology. Unfortunately, again, something that's a little hush-hush, but more to come there. But I saw some cotton fields, and like you said, the time is now. Cotton harvest is starting. And these all five machines are actually located in Arkansas. We have a 2014 model, a pair of 2012 models, and a pair of 2011 models, all of them ranging between 2,500 engine hours and 3,100 engine hours. And all of them are six row machines brought on this sale by the good folks of Greenway Equipment. And in hearing Mark Stock and Greg Peterson talk about them, they talk about, so what's the strategy behind selling multiples of a yeah. model on an auction? And Mark says a lot of times folks kind of sit back and wait and see what the first one sells for. And he's encouraging people to maybe not employ that strategy here because of the scarcity of equipment. Maybe it's yep. not the best strategy to sit back and wait. Maybe the strategy is to, if you see that item, if you see that model that you really want, it's a great buying opportunity. And especially Greg highlighted with these 7760 cotton pickers, a great opportunity compared to some of the other cotton pickers that are on the model, on the market. This model, it's just a great time for folks to look if they are in the market.
Right. Okay. Earlier, you mentioned that you were looking at the next gen of sprayers, but there's a 2015 Case IH Patriot 4440 sprayer on this auction as well. So if you're looking for a sprayer, there's a good one.
Yep. And that one has less than 3,600 engine hours. It's out of Blackfoot, Idaho at C&B Operations. So as you were saying, Chip, with online auctions, we're able to bring equipment from across the country into one event. And Mark Stock reports that sprayers are still pretty hot at auction, especially the sprayers in good condition.
Yep. And the tractors are always hot. Give us some of the highlights.
Yeah, so we've got five tractors on this sale, a 1999 John Deere 8410 out of Missouri. It's got about 8,200 hours, GPS ready, large 1,000 PTO. We also have a 1963 John Deere 4010 diesel wide front. So a pretty classic tractor, right? Maybe even a restoration opportunity, or some farmers may put it to use around the farm, put it on an auger, or put it on a small wagon, etc. These are both out of Jeffriesburg Enterprise out of Beaufort, Missouri. So actually not too far from where I'm sitting right now. And a quick stat from Greg at Machinery Pete, the current average auction price on 4010s is up almost 12% this year. It's the highest it's been in 20 years. That current average auction price is about $6,400. Okay. So here's your chance to hop in and bid on a solid 1963 model 4010.
All right. There's also, as Greg described it, a sharp 2018 John Deere 460R round baler that's coming out of Oklahoma. I got to mention that Greg is going to be at the Farm Science Review Show in Ohio on Wednesday. He's going to be at the New Holland exhibit from 11 to 12 Eastern time. He's going to be there to give a presentation, but you know him. If you walk up to him, there's going to be a conversation to be had. So, hey, Margie, great job today. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again Wednesday.
Thanks, Chip. Bidding closes tomorrow, folks. Everyone head to auctions.machinerypete.com.
Perfect. Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. All right, we've got Mike Steenhoek from the Soy Transportation Coalition next.
On your farm, achieving better yields is always the goal. But replacing current equipment with new isn't always an option. Bring new life and new technology to your current equipment with a John Deere Performance Upgrade Kit. It all starts at your local John Deere dealer. Schedule an inspection today to see how a customizable performance upgrade kit from John Deere can unlock the potential of your existing equipment. Search John Deere Performance Upgrade Kit to learn more.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady Beach. A lot of negative numbers in the change category for the commodity world again today. What is going on?
Yeah, really broad-based, Chip. A couple things, concerns on the U.S. Debt limit and if we'll get there and if there'll be an extension before the U.S. government defaults. So that's one. And two, the Chinese real estate situation. That's causing global concerns and a possible domino effect there. So we got quite a bit of broad-based just risk-off selling like we saw late last week and carrying over to early this week here. And you mentioned it, but grain and soy futures under pressure, livestock futures, they're under pressure as well. But you look further out and the stock market under heavy pressure here to start the week. The U.S. dollar has been trading higher, has backed off those highs, but just real broad-based risk-off trades so far this morning.
Yeah, it feels like the soybean market deserves some special mention. We've got 15 to 20 cent losses there. Anything in particular?
No, you know, the soy complex in general, with soy oils under heavy pressure and soybeans as well, they're taking it on the chin the hardest. The corn market actually is performing the best of the grain and soy markets so far this morning.
Yeah, no question about that. This hog market, last week we had some gains on the week. What do we need to see in that hog market this week?
Well, I think we're still waiting to see if the cash market will put in a short-term seasonal low before we face heavier seasonal selling in here. But the interesting one this morning to me is feeder cattle. They were under pressure early, but they've come off their lows as corn has come off its lows.
Got it. Thank you, Brian.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Find farm equipment on Machinery Pete's September 21st auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now at auctions.machinerypete.com.
Welcome back. I'm Chip Flory, got Davis Michelson with us, and this
Hello.
Is AgriTalk. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Davis, we continue
Yes.
to keep tabs of what was happening down at the Gulf,
Mm-hmm.
okay, with the getting the export capacity back online. And obviously, Mike Steenhook from the Soy Transportation Coalition, where he is the executive director, keeps tabs of that as well as anybody we know. And it's time to get an update on the situation down there. Let's bring him in right now. Mike, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
I am doing fine, Chip. Good to be with you.
Good, good, good. You know, Mike, before we get an update on what the current status is, this was kind of a devastating hit that Hurricane Ida delivered, wasn't it?
It was, you know, and you know, it's a 150 mile an hour sustained wind is quite a punch, and
yeah.
I mean, you can try to build resilience into your infrastructure, but that is a quite a violent storm. And you know, one of the things that I thought was really notable is how quickly it emerged. I mean, really, 3 days before the storm arrived, Hurricane Ida was not in my lexicon. Because this was not a storm that emerged, percolated off the west coast of Africa, meandered its way across the Atlantic Ocean, and then arrived at our doorstep. It really just quickly developed and materialized in the Gulf of Mexico. And then, you know, a couple days later, there you're dealing with a category
right.
4 storm. So that, yeah, it was, you know, that's something that clearly it's becoming more and more of a reality. And it really underscores the importance of being able to rapidly take those precautionary measures.
Yep. You know, one of the observations that we've made a couple of times on this, Mike, and I'm interested to see if you would agree with this. Thank God that the storm surge protection worked. Thank God that the floodgates protecting New Orleans worked. But because they worked, it seems like the networks just left town as quickly as the storm did. And the coverage of how much damage was actually left, the coverage was kind of lacking, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And you know, if there's not weeping and gnashing of teeth and people, trying to find a way to try to politicize things, then it's not a shiny enough object for the media to cover. And so they're on to other important things, at least that what they deem important. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we were very happy to see the levee system and the pumping infrastructure hold. It really reminds us of, you know, one of the, you know, bits of wisdom when it comes to supply chain is the time to respond to a catastrophe is before the catastrophe, not
right.
after the catastrophe.
Perfect.
And so,
that's where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so that's, but, you know, hopefully as we, you know, continue to try to debate and design a strategy for our infrastructure, that whole issue of resiliency, and have it just
yes.
be a way of doing business. You bake it into the cake that, you know, yeah. you've got what are the resiliency measures, and you include it, and you do it when you're actually constructing it, not when you're trying to take corrective action after a storm like Hurricane
Perfect.
Ida arrives.
Perfect, Mike. Yep, that's the message right there. That is the message. Okay, let's start with the barge situation before we get to the actual loading facilities down there. Do they have everything corralled?
Yeah, they do, but there's still some real damage to a pretty considerable number of barges. And you're seeing that, I think, reflected in barge rates. This is normally a time of the year where we've got harvest coming online, so rates always tend to go up at this time of the year. But if all of a sudden you take a decent number of barges just out of your inventory, and then you're still expecting that supply chain to be able to accommodate the throughput, we're just really not able to do that right now. And so it puts upward pressure on rates. So, you saw all these images of barges being submerged, some of them empty, some of them loaded, a lot of them got untethered from their banks, and, it created some problems. But, while that's been corralled so that the shipping channel is operating, for those who own those barges, all of a sudden you've got a number of your assets. Each one can handle 55,000 bushels of soybeans. All of a sudden you've just removed those from your operations.
Right. Right. Okay. Take us into the loading facilities. How much have we gotten back? How much are we still lacking?
Yeah, there's really just two that were, so there's 14 soybean and grain loading facilities down, between that Baton Rouge, Louisiana, past New Orleans to the Gulf of Mexico. And, the one that's most notable is this Cargill facility in the town of Reserve, Louisiana, and that's about 30 miles northwest of New Orleans. And it's the conveyor system is damaged pretty significantly, and that's what's used to actually load the vessels. The million-dollar question is this a repair that will take weeks, or is this a repair that will take months? That's the million-dollar question. I mean, it's clearly more than me with toolbox in hand going down to fix it. It's going to be a pretty significant repair. So that's the main one. And then there's still power in some of the outlying areas that still need to be restored. And it looks like that will occur end of this month. And that does affect the CHS facility that is south of New Orleans by about 40 miles.
Okay. Yeah. Myrtle Grove for the CHS facility.
Yeah. That's the furthest south facility on the Mississippi River.
Okay. What's the attitude about where we can be as far as total capacity goes by October 1? The reason I ask this, Mike, is even though the sales pace on corn and soybeans, which has been okay because we tend to forget about all the sales that were made a long time ago for delivery in this marketing year. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done. The attitude that I continue to pick up is that if we can have those 14 facilities back to 85% capacity by October 1, we can get this done. Can we get there?
Yeah, I think that's I think we can get close to that. Again, that Cargill facility, that's about I've heard estimates 7 to 8% of our exports, leave from that facility. So
that's a big
one. It has two shipping berths, which a lot of these just have one shipping berth. And so that's the real big question. But, as you know, you've got harvest coming online in places like Mississippi. And then normally you want all of that to clear out of the system before the real tsunami of Iowa and Illinois and, Kentucky and Missouri and all of these other states come online. So it's always a real delicate balance. And so that's what we're really hoping for. I'm hopeful that we can get pretty close to that.
Okay, good. Looks like the plans are that we're still going to see a vote September 27 on the infrastructure plans. What are the odds? What are you thinking here?
I mean, I think there's still, a good chance. I mean, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they actually have to extend. We have this highway bill that's scheduled to sunset on September 30th. So if we want to keep our highway program moving forward, you have to extend that. So I don't think we'll have a full replacement by September 30th. I bet you extend it for a period of time. But I do think overall that there's a really good chance of getting a comprehensive transportation bill passed. It clearly is a priority of the president, and it's a priority for a lot of members of Congress. But the real big question is, how painful will that journey be by the fact that you've got some members of Congress that want to do it in isolation And there's others who want to do it in conjunction with this more controversial piece of legislation, that budget reconciliation bill.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know if the two can be separated anymore. Hey, President Biden made the mistake and very early and said, listen, make no mistake, these two pieces of legislation are linked. And it's almost been like the Democrat leaders in the House and Senate have been trying to prove that wrong ever since. But the left, the far left, keeps reminding everybody that, no, if we don't get the Build Back Better plan, we're not getting the physical infrastructure plan. That's a real risk, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it clearly is, and it would be pretty, kind of a black eye on you know, the president and also the Democrats, if they're, given the fact that they control the House, the Senate, and the presidency, that they, and they espouse the need to do something on infrastructure, if throughout this entire process they get nothing. And mm-hmm. So, you know, again, my crystal ball isn't perfect. I think that they're going to have an infrastructure bill actually get passed and then have that budget reconciliation bill get dialed back pretty considerably, probably into the $1.8 to $2 trillion figure. That's quite an indictment on Washington D.C. when dialing something back gets you to $1.8 to $2 trillion. That's a commentary on our times. But that's, yep, again, that's my prognosis. But you know, again, yeah, Washington D.C. they can often, you know, be a place where what your predictions don't come to fruition.
That's right. That's right. Mike, it's always good to talk with you and good to get an update. Man, I hope you're right. And I think you are. I think you are, in that we're going to get what we need back online by October 1, and it'll be there and ready to go when that new crop, those new crop barges start to show up. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you, man.
Always good to be with you. Thanks, Chip.
You bet. Mike Steenhook, Executive Director of the Soy Transportation Coalition. Davis and I will be back to wrap things up.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal, Davis Michelson, back on the air with you and Chip Flory. Huh? It's a great day.
Man.
It's a great day. Super excited to be back here. Just one more shout out to South Dakota. Doggone it.
Yeah.
You people are great out there. I absolutely love it out there. It's fantastic. It's fantastic.
I'll be making a trip out there in November myself.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. How far west are you going to make it?
Not that far.
Okay. Okay.
Not near as far as you go.
Well,
that's for sure.
Well, yeah. I understand that. Okay, so I had some conversations in your absence with some country music performers. You, in the break, were talking about,
yeah,
you'd spoken to Sam L. Smith.
Yes.
But, dude, it's September 20. It's September 20.
Today's the day.
Today's the day. Today's
that's
the day.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah, we also talked with Sarah Morgan last week.
Uh-huh.
Both are going to be part of the Farm On Benefit concert that airs tonight at 7 p.m. Central on RFD. It is the, as I said, the Farm On Benefit concert is presented by Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation. Easton Corbin is the feature, along with Alex Smith, Sam L. Smith, Alex Miller, Sam L. Smith, Sarah Morgan, and others are going to be involved in it. We want you to be involved in it as well. It is a benefit concert to benefit FFA. A couple of ways to do it. Go online, donate at ffa.org/farmon, or you can make a $10 donation by texting the word farmon, one word, to the number 20222.
Chip.
There you go.
Okay.
Yes.
On another note,
mm-hmm,
like it or not, and this sort of snuck up on me, this realization, that you and I are part of the media, bro.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm aware.
We work in media.
Yes.
Well, you and Mike Steenhook from the Soy Transportation
coalition we're talking about. Yeah. Mike said there, you know, once the storm hit and then sort of blew out. Yeah.
I loved it.
There wasn't enough wailing and gnashing of teeth. It wasn't a shiny enough object for the media to stay interested in. Man, is that some harsh, but yet some pretty astute criticism of the mainstream media anyway.
Right. Right. And that's why we are staying focused on what is happening down at the Gulf. We've had at least weekly and most often twice a week update since Ida rolled through, trying to stay on top of with what is happening with those loading facilities down there. And like Mike said, at the CHS facility there at Myrtle Grove, they still don't have power on. Now think about the people that are living on that same line. It's been a month and they are still without power, and it's not like it gets hot down there at this time of the year or anything.
Oh no, I'm sure it's fine.
Right. It's just, man, I hope they get that power on. And part of it is because I want that facility to get back up and running, but let's get power back on for the residents down there south of Louisiana. And I don't know how populated it is, but I do know that people live there. And if there's one guy down there that doesn't have power, I'd like for him to have it.
Yeah, I would too. I would too. So I think if I can just translate for the listener what you're saying there, if I can boil it down.
Okay.
What you're saying is if you want real news from real experts, you got to come to AgriTalk.
I think that's right.
We're like an island, not even a peninsula. We're an island. Is what we are, buddy.
Good stuff. Well, for at least what we think matters.
Well, sure. Yeah. There's a screening process. There's a whole thing about frozen fish and shipping containers and stuff that I didn't even report on. I mean, I love seafood, but, I didn't know if we'd have time to get into all that because there's so much other important stuff. Interesting also that Steen Hoek was talking about that black eye potentially forming on the Democrat Party because if they're not going to separate out these bills and they can't get one passed and the other passes, then he's talking about down possibly sub $2 trillion.
Right. Bernie Sanders, Senator Sanders was on the news programs over the weekend. He would lose his mind if it goes all the way down to 1.8 to 2 trillion. He would lose his mind. He still is of the belief that 3.5 is the base, and we go up from there. We go up.
Right.
And according to how some of the pay-fors are written in the bill, it's already up from there because of some of the accounting shenanigans that are included in the bill that it really means it's going to cost, as stands, build back is closer to five, maybe even just north of $5 trillion.
Yep.
This is really crazy. Now, the other thing is on the debt limit. Last week, Treasury Secretary, good grief, Janet Yellen, started throwing out the warning saying, listen, you guys, pay attention to this. I can maybe do some end runs and end arounds and everything to keep the government operating until the middle of October, but you're going to have to do something about the debt ceiling. Well, the Democrat leadership basically said, but we're going to need help from some Republicans to get that done. And Republican leadership took a step back and said, you've got the House, you've got the Senate, you've got the White House.
Right.
What more do you need to get the job done to raise the debt ceiling? If you think that it has to happen, you know, and the other thing that McConnell said, and he's as much a politician as any of them.
Oh, yes. Basically, don't kid yourself.
Yep. He basically looked at Schumer and Pelosi and said, well, we know the debt ceiling is going to be raised. It's just a question of who's going to do it. In other words, he said, if you think it needs to happen, go ahead and do it.
Yep.
But don't expect any help from the Republicans. Crazy stuff, man.
Wow.
Crazy. Welcome back, Davis.
Thanks, brother.
All right. Hey, come back this afternoon. We've got a great conversation lined up. Kent Beadle from Agurian Risk Management is going to be with us. That's a division of CHS Hedging. That's this afternoon, 2:06 Central, right here, AgriTalk.